Welcome back to the Stanford Healthcare AI podcast. We're so excited to be joined by Kimberly Powell, who's been leading healthcare efforts at NVIDIA for almost the last 2 decades. We'll get into a lot more of what that means in a second, but unless you're living under a rock, NVIDIA is the largest company ever today, over $4 trillion in market cap. And we're just so thrilled to have Kimberly joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Justin and Matt. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I'll signpost a few of the topics we'll go through. We'll talk through some of just the recent AI developments. We'll talk through a few of the different things we're seeing around the world on chat with EHR. And then excited to kind of get into some of the robotics angle, which we have yet to talk about whatsoever. But I wanted to start with this familiar topic around search and how people are starting to use these tools. Matt, can you tell us what we're looking at here?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think a lot of my clinician colleagues are also seeing kind of similar trends where, again, there was that, and we've talked about this on the show before, but this is one of those threads that I think will continue to come up, which is, how are our patients using the models? And it's almost like you're starting to see a lot more sophistication on the part of the patient in terms of having had a conversation with one of the frontier models and their healthcare data or their diagnosis or their treatment or whatever. And it's actually been, in some cases, really refreshing, feeling like I can have a conversation with my patient and that they have a lot more background and frankly have been spending a lot of time working with the models, explaining some of the concepts. But at the same time, I think this is a good way to look at maybe that trend from a different perspective, because I think historically it was always, you go to a search engine, you start Q&A-ing that, then you go through a bunch of links, you go down some rabbit hole, right? And then I feel like a lot of times, at least historically, in the pre-GPT days, you're spending a lot of time in the clinic visit sort of explaining away some of those problematic rabbit holes, right? Because the model, there's no model behind it, and maybe they didn't have the context or maybe even the literacy, frankly, to sort of navigate some of these really complicated sites or informational resources, et cetera. And so I guess this trend. Listen, is this definitely because of the models? Hard to say. It's kind of an interesting coincidence if it isn't. I think more and more folks, I don't know if Kim, I mean, I ask this all the time to my friends too, like, are you putting your data in? Are you putting your loved one? I mean, 'cause I literally do that with my own healthcare data, and it's fascinating. And I learned some things too.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it has some similarities. I watched a show where you guys talked a lot about like when you had the power of the internet, both as patient and clinician, how it had to change the way that you work, right? Talk the patients out of all the things that they read. What is so different now, though, with these large language models, is the introduction of reasoning. Right, it's not just the memorization of anything that might have happened with some adverse, effect of a drug. It's listening to you. It's remembering things about you. In fact, just this weekend, in our own family situation, it asks you questions and says like, "Oh, well, you were up in Maine. Is it possible that you were, bit by a tick, and that maybe you should screen for Lyme disease?" Right. Just so the fact that it can reason, the fact that it has memory and context about you as a patient, I think that's what's going to be kind of game changing about this. So hopefully the models are going to help not have to do so much explaining away and actually empower the patient a lot to just all that context that we take for granted as patients, but is such powerful information for doctors, but you can't always remember it when you're in that 30-minute visit and you're feeling nervous and anxious and all these other things, chat can help maintain all of that memory for you. So I think it's going to be really stunning, a stunning experience.
I think what's also totally agree. And I think what's also fascinating is when you compare this, and obviously there's many, many things going on here, and it's hard to isolate one thing, but when you compare the health queries to everything else, the health queries are the most down, right? And that's fascinating to me. And like what we were actually laughing before we came on. I still used a Google search, like, oh my gosh, what a Luddite. I'm not using technology for everything, but I do use search for something still. I kind of know I shouldn't, but I'm used to it. But for health queries, I'll never touch Google first, right? It will definitely go to a model to go give more context, ask more questions, go down a rabbit hole. And so it does feel different, at least for me personally, from a healthcare standpoint. And then, compared to other things that I haven't fully changed my workflow yet on, for health questions, it's by far the first place for me to go.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think part of it too is what I would like to see hopefully in the future is a correlation also to another chart that shows interest in preventative health, routine screenings are up. I would love to see that this lead to a carryover effect to potentially, I guess, health literacy writ large, in this democratization of, I guess, the care management journey. Because ultimately we can't really experience any of the true outcomes until this causes behavior change, and as we know, that's hard to do in a 15-minute clinic visit or whatever. And you often wait for these episodic crises of care, as opposed to, hey, I'd love to just talk about let's plan out the next, 6 months, 2 years, whatever. I'm optimistic though that just that literacy and the education will lead to some of those other behaviors. And I guess we'll have to stay tuned to find out.
So, I mean, you talked about actually, Kim, you brought up context and, asking for more information and, were you traveling in Maine? And, I was, kind of laughing, thinking through, this is like asking, our infectious disease consult, where these are the clinicians that spend more time with the patient, go far deeper, pull all these things together. One of the interesting things we're also starting to see now in a few different places is people trying to bring more context to models working in systems. And so the examples I'm starting to touch on are, these different, with EHR pieces, where, hey, rather than having the patient or the clinician have to feed everything to that subsequent model, can we bring some of this data almost directly to the models to kind of query in different ways? And so there's a few studies that have come out here over the past. And actually, Matt, yeah, what did you want to highlight here?
Well, I think this is that chat EHR that I think, kind of made quite a few headlines from the work out of Stanford. But the basic gist of it is, systems are setting up. Well, so first of all, systems are seeing the trend where clinicians and other healthcare, folks in the healthcare workforce are realizing that there's some real advantages to using the models for the things that they do. That's obviously not necessarily a compliance. There's a compliancy risk. There's all the things we've talked about in prior episodes around that problem of folks just using the open API or web app on their phone, for example, in the healthcare setting. So then health systems are then setting up alternative ways to access frontier models that are more of a, safe, compliant, secure. Okay, that still requires cutting and pasting. And to your point, Justin, bringing the context over from the records or whatever, or having to put more information. Now it's like, well, why don't we just connect it? And in a lot of cases, it's a smart on fire, just connect it directly into the EHR, pull in the data that's relevant, and I can ask summarization questions or maybe, best tests or potentially reference guidelines or whatever those things are. I think that it does raise an interesting point because there's a couple articles. Well, the one on the right is from a group out of Europe where there's additional regulatory considerations that require, in this case, required them to leverage local models. And I think we are seeing, when we talk about the prior frontier and the capabilities of the models, that models are getting smaller, models are getting faster, models are getting cheaper, and models are increasingly run in local environments. And so, Kim, I mean, clearly NVIDIA is leading the world in so many areas, but I think one of the big ones is efficient running of frontier models, distillation of the models on edge deployments. And all the advantages there too that I think, particularly in healthcare, where there's so much, concern around privacy and obviously restrictions around use, this could be a really powerful use case. I don't know if you're seeing a similar thing where folks are like, hey, I'd love to deploy it locally in this area, but I need the horsepower to run it, or I need to connect it a certain way. I don't know if you have a sense of that trend, but it's definitely something we're seeing.
Yeah, I mean, we're interested to enable these models to run everywhere you could imagine, right? I mean, you want it to run inside your car. you would want it to run inside your operating room, right, Matt? Like you don't want to have to ask a nurse or yourself disengage a surgery ever to maybe pull up a prior piece of information, whether that be an image that you took of the patient prior to the surgery, or any potential comorbidities and things that might get tricky when your surgery is getting more lengthy. You just want to be able to talk, to something that's listening ambiently and provide you that very relevant, very important real-time information. So having models be able to just live on edge it's a necessary condition. But it's just like, models run in the car, but you're going to phone home to more capable models potentially that need to do other type of tasks that run in the cloud. And so we absolutely see a complete hybrid. And being an accelerated computing company, we're just always been passionate, focused, and taking the most important computing technology and fitting it into the tiniest compute footprint. One, so it's accessible. Two, so it can, as you say, run on the edge. Some of the most important and I would say, risky applications are these edge applications, because there's usually life at risk. And if it's life at risk, you need to have the models to be so close to the humans that it's interacting with. So I think there's reason that we have to be really focused on taking this amazing capability and putting it in tiny packages and running it everywhere.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's interesting, thinking about autonomous cars, other places where really life's at risk, things really have moved to the edge. If I look back though at where we're at in healthcare today, I would say, we're early. We're very, I mean, one, we don't have autonomous surgeries going on or anything like that yet. Most of our problems we have, stopped. So difference just for people, if you're driving a car, you can't just slam on the brake if you lose internet connection. That's real bad. For a chat with EHR function, yes, it's not good if you don't have that data, but you're not in the middle, hopefully of an operation or something where you are depending on this data. I guess, Kim, where do you see this starting? Because if I grade us right now, we're still very, very early. So where do you see, because you're going to see, the literal frontier of this. Where do you see starting of things getting pulled to the edge and kind of moving that way in healthcare?
Yeah, and if let's think about what kind of agents there are, or utility of agents in healthcare. We think of digital agents. They could be vision agents. They could be ambient listening agents. They could be information retrieval agents. And so and as you say it, we're connected with it's approaching 5,000 AI startup companies in healthcare alone here at NVIDIA. So we do see quite a bit. But vision, as Fei-Fei at Stanford pioneered for us, or helped pioneer for the whole world, vision is a huge aspect. And I think we're not yet taking full advantage of it in the healthcare space, but it's going to be an absolute necessary condition. And then the ability now with being able to do speech recognition, we're doing a crazy amount of awesome research with fantastic companies like Abridge, where you need to know exactly who's speaking, who they are, the context of that person, because you're digitizing that language and you're going to turn it into some kind of action, right? These tokens of speech turn into some kind of task that we have to end up going to do. So you need to know if the patient said that, if the nurse said that, if the doctor said that, if and so all of that has to be, really, really looked after. But I think that vision systems are coming into play now, because there's a lot of fantastic efficiency you can have just by being able to track things in the hospital, or timing of surgeries, or being able to see the flow of patients within hospitals, and then connecting a lot of that vision. Now the trend of vision language models that have reasoning, in fact. This is where the vision systems of the past, where they might have been a little tricky for nursing stations, because they would have over alerted perhaps, right? And cause actually potentially more work on the staff than you would want. I believe that these reasoning systems and chain of thought, where you can really attach the agents to how that hospital runs in very particular ways, we're going to be able to really reduce some of that overhead that came with the first generation of vision systems, for example. And then, digital agents that then combine into, as I said, just we were talking very early on how, why are the health searches going down? Because you can just have a conversation with your phone now as a patient, and you're getting prompted and things like that. And so the fact that we can now do that ambient listening in a healthcare setting, oh my gosh, right? I get so excited about the possibilities, because it's not just the thing that was written down, it's all that other context that's being digitized, both by the doctors and the nurses exchange and the patient exchange. All of that can facilitate just a massive amount of opportunity. So vision systems, ambient listening systems, and then the ability to attach them to what is otherwise really messy healthcare IT systems. We're in a whole new category of possibilities now. World is the oyster, and that's why we see just the startup community and the AI applications that are really domain specific, really vertical for healthcare, being wildly successful. 100 to 200 million annual recurring revenue startup companies in the matter of 12 to 24 months is absolutely unheard of in this industry. It's just been, they used to be fraught with barriers to entry. Whether that was computational footprint, whether that was safety considerations, whether that was the ability for clinicians or nurses to adopt it. Here, the adoption is human language, speaking to a phone. They're all familiar with it, right? There's no learning a new UI. The UI is speech, or the UI is a camera just, watching over me. Or, so there the barriers are really coming down super fast. That's what's super exciting.
Yeah, I mean, as you know me, this is so true in terms of the multimodal aspect, because we always say, like, there's so much that you can do. And we've shown this in prior, episodes of different data around the performance of these models and, like, traditional text-based tasks. And there's a lot still to do. But when you get the multimodal, to your point, that unlocks an entirely new surface area. There's so much more information that we process just as human clinicians with our eyes and our senses. And we know that there's information being transmitted that may not be captured in language. Do we have the infrastructure of the low latency systems? I think we're getting there, right? And in terms of the computational capabilities, but then also, to use the voice example, just as a different modality, just on the voice biomarkers, right? We're seeing startups that can take just the audio data and have a very high prediction rate for, neurodegenerative disease or depression or other things. And it just adds these layers of more opportunity for us. And I think some of it, you might ask, like, an old timer clinician who could probably walk in a room and tell it, like, within 2 minutes what's going on, maybe before anyone speaks a word. And because there's something to your point about the vision aspect, to the sound, anyway, I'm just as optimistic as you are that we're scratching the surface. And then I think on your point about the alerts, I think to me, like, this is where that abstraction layer with an agent that understands context, you can interact with it almost like, quote unquote, like a human, but can feed the or use those tools as independent systems in the context of the situation and help filter out some of the potentially false positives or alert fatigue that ends up going on when you have, like you said, like dozens of these running, and they're just kind of like being triggered by a simple event as opposed to a contextual awareness. I think there's a lot of work there that I'm seeing that's really exciting. Again, that taps into the idea of agents, but you all have really thought a lot about agents. And I think what I like about the approach NVIDIA has taken is it doesn't just stop with the digital world. You really are pushing into the, physical world, I think. And I don't really know of another tech company that's thought quite as much about the robotic space. And then, by the way, can we create a developer ecosystem where folks can build on that no matter what the vertical? But obviously, I'm biased. I think healthcare robotics is going to explode in the next 5 years. And, I don't know what you're seeing, but I just feel like there's so much opportunity to marry the context the multimodal with now interactions in the physical world. And that could be as simple as, supply chain and, back office type things, but it can also be literally in the operating room. Like I don't know where this is going to go. I don't know if you have a sense, but it seems really exciting.
Yeah, we're more than excited about it. I mean, a lot of the stuff that we were just talking about, you could just go so far as to say every hospital is going to be a robot. You know, it is a 3D, it's a 3D space, it's a physical space. You have to understand the 3D world to do all of the things that you just described, to really have the appropriate context. The distance between things matters, the speed at which things are traveling matters, the size and volume of things matters, right? And so having that physical understanding of the world is what will enable the future of what I'd say an embodiment of an AI hospital. And it's going to be a necessary condition in the future state of surgical robotics, because if you think about this as a multi-scale problem. You know, on the one hand, you want to have, your hospital be a robot so that efficiency, like you were talking about, a lot of back office and a lot of efficiency, where, obviously is absolutely necessary. We're tens of millions of healthcare professionals short of the demand of healthcare. So we have to do something, even at the hospital environment level, to offload any kind of non-clinical work. It's just a necessary condition for us to be able to serve the population. But then you get into, okay, like we were talking about, in the doctor's office, right? There's that office is kind of a robot in itself, listening, observing, capturing, and then, moving into a more intense environment where you have to actually receive treatment. That could be the patient room, where you might have lots of monitoring systems, and then all the way into where it's very, very, very complicated, into the operating room. And even there, right? So the operating room itself is a robot. The surgical device and all of the other devices surrounding that patient is going to be robotic. And then the human, we are going to want to simulate every individual patient's anatomy and understand its essential, physicality and functionality. And that is essentially, living in a simulation environment. So, at the atomic, scale, so that we can teach these robots how to work. And so we're super excited about the physical AI space. We've created what we call the three computer platform, which is truly accelerating this. There's a reason why robots kind of were steady state in not being able to be super useful, and that's because we didn't have the third computer, which is essentially simulation and understanding the physical world. And all physical things in the future will be born in a computer first. You won't make the robot then try to teach it in the real world, because as you can see, it takes decades to try to generate enough training data or write enough rules in software for them to be robust enough to be in our physical environment. But once you can introduce this new concept of physical AI, which there are these new class of models called World Foundation models. Again, Fei-Fei Li and the team at Stanford doing amazing work there, NVIDIA doing amazing work with our Cosmos models. You can essentially create millions, billions, trillions, if you like, scenarios, in which case you can start to train these otherwise physical things. Could be a surgical robot, could be a cobot, it could be just any kind of medical device that will be working with patients. And so that third computer has been the missing link, and it is here now with World Foundation models and the ability to do very physically accurate digital twin environments. So synthetically generating information and then being able to physically accurately represent it in a computer such that it obeys the laws of physics. So we can train robots in very real time, and everything from every medical device, whether that's an ultrasound machine, is going to be autonomous in the future. You're going to be entering autonomous X-ray rooms and diagnostic suites, diagnostic imaging suites, all the way through to, in fact, the very first, excuse me, FDA approved autonomous robotic task. Just came through at our GTC conference with a company called Moon Surgical. This is a surgical assistant robot, and they pioneered by watching the tools, the scope actually follows and moves. Otherwise, a surgical technician, a surgeon is talking to a technician to do that motion, and it's on obviously robotic arms, so it has like just extreme precision, and that's the first time through AI vision systems that they've actually allowed the robot to actuate in a surgical environment. So we're moving now. We're cooking in this area, and I think we're going to see a lot of very, very rapid advancements in the operating room, in the patient room, and I would say in the hospital as a whole.
Yeah, I love so much there. I'm excited about. I think that the idea of digital twins, and I honestly should do a tip of the cap to another space that we don't talk about as much on the show, which is manipulating the chemical environment, the molecular environment for drug discovery, which is a whole nother topic altogether. But to your point, this simulation idea is fascinating to me because, like, again, like we encounter all these edge cases all the time. In fact, that's how you can separate the good proceduralist from the inexperienced proceduralist, is right. It's having that muscle memory, seeing the edge cases, being aware of that, and having that assistant the whole time. I've been pushing my team here occasionally. I haven't gotten any takers, but to literally do, like, you remember Tesla had the dojo, right, where they like would simulate millions of different outcomes. I always thought we could have a hospital dojo, and we just like let everything play out and just see what happens in all these different. And I my running joke, my dad joke version of this is that in 99 out of the 100 scenarios, the clinicians rise up against the administrators and take over the hospital. I say that with tongue in cheek, but I do feel like there's an opportunity to take real world data, possibly physical environments, and, like, to your point, simulate this with the world model, and probably come up with the optimal care that is like the quintessential precision medicine, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is well within reach, Matt, right? We at our GPU Technology Conference this year, we announced a platform called Isaac for Healthcare. And this is all of the tools necessary. It's digital assets that are already pre-made for you, hospital beds, operating tables, lamps, that you can start to build out these digital twins. We're working feverishly, and we were just at the Society of Robotic Surgery conference announcing a whole bunch of new technology and workflows for telesurgery, for being able to build an autonomous ultrasound, where you can use just a commercial off-the-shelf arm and attach a mobile transducer to it. You can speak to this robotic arm and say, "Please go scan the liver," and it automatically scans the liver, doing the vision system in the background that's seeing, liver lesions, and all of this are now developer tools available to the community, all open source. And so we can build that environment, and then you can take these Cosmos models, and also we have group models to be able to create those corner cases. We're working with clinicians to say they did experience those corner cases, sometimes traumatically, for themselves and their patients. So you can build that into these foundation models, and make sure that it captures that pre-existing, experience, as well as go hallucinate and dream up a crazy thing that hasn't, thank God, happened, but could be, physically feasible. And so I think it's going to be just really exciting to see how fast it's going to advance. Just like we're seeing in the digital world, we've not seen technology sort of enter the healthcare space at this pace before. I think in the physical aspect of what we're talking about, we're going to feel a similar experience.
Wow, so we're moving. I totally agree with you, Kim, also on how fast software is running in. We haven't seen adoption like this. to come more on the surgical side, other places, but help ground us how we get there from your perspective. Obviously, the three of us are some of the most, optimistic people around where AI is going to go, what's coming next, thinking, about what's possible. When I ground this in, let's say, the perspective of a hospital CEO today, as they're looking at these tools, what do they see? They see, the financial impacts coming from, the one big beautiful bill coming down and looking at serious cuts to staff, other resources, ways to make ends meet. I would say the broader context historically is most of those CEOs who got there today, the right answer for call it the past 2 or 3 decades has been to ignore technology. Right? Every new shiny thing that's come along, more or less the right answer has been to ignore it. Just wait, let someone else try it out first. Don't get distracted by, blockchain, first generation, of AI systems that came out a decade ago. It's been the right answer to ignore it. How do you, as you have these conversations, start to bridge for those people? This is where we're going. I know where you're coming from, where you haven't done. Why should they do something now to start interacting with these tools? What is the way either of you kind of hook them in to kind of engage now with these topics?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've also have that we have the great benefit of ChatGPT being an interface the whole world could understand. Okay, that's a great benefit. Now you're speaking to it, right? First you were typing. That's still a pain in the butt for doctors and nurses. Now you can speak to it. I mean, just last night I had to move. I moved houses and I had to unscrew something and I couldn't figure out what bit to use. I turned on the camera. And I'm like, which bit do I use? And he's like, the third row down, two into the right. And it was perfect. Right. And so, like, it empowers me to do crazy things like that. So I think we have the great benefit that this is just so accessible to every human. And I honestly believe that if you're a CEO of a health system, you're going to start feeling it's unethical for me to not help empowering my existing. Overworked, burnt out, potentially leaving the workforce, healthcare professionals with these tools. They are demanding it and they're expecting it. So it's in a way, it's almost unethical. And secondly, there's no way they're going to get out of the red if they don't find other ways to treat more patients. They can't hire the people. They can't hire more healthcare professionals. So they've got to find other ways where technology is going to fill this great gap. So there are unfortunate things. There's fortunate things that are at the advantage, and there's unfortunate things that are also kind of pushing in this way. And then, as we said, the software as a service technology of the last 2 decades was tremendously challenging. Right. It was $3 billion in 3 years of installation and then 3 more years of potential change management to adopt these technologies of the past. Today, when you want to engage a company like Abridge, who has just a stunning clinical conversational AI domain system that is excellent, you download an app on your phone. And you ask your patient, do you mind if I use this? There's absolutely no learning curve. So the excuses to ignore technology have just completely diminished. And the existential crisis that the healthcare system is finding itself in is unethical and must demand it, right? And so that's still like very much in this digital world. But the moment we start to see all this ability where you can you're not going to be able to hire the person to check your patients in. It's going to be a digital kiosk. And why not? Why shouldn't it be? You want to have your conversation with your doctor recorded, both for the clinical outcome and for the patient understanding and hopefully the preventative things it's going to help and do. You're going to want to have an agent tell you what next appointment you need to make, right? So that you can stay on your course of care and hopefully reduce the cost of the healthcare system long term. And so then we're going to be like, of course we're going to get more comfortable with cameras living in the hospital right? Because it has all of this contextual information and it can catch and see things and do things that wasn't possible before. And you know, I am a tech optimist here. I am at NVIDIA for 20 years, but I am a patient, and we all are. And when I get a colonoscopy, I want an AI looking at my colonoscopy. When I get a mammogram, I want an AI looking at my mammogram. You know, if I'm having a surgery that Intuitive's Da Vinci is expert at, I'm going to want to go to a hospital that has that, right? And so there's just so much push and pull here that it's creating the conditions, I think, where it just can't be ignored and it shouldn't be ignored. And the software developers of this era really have everything they at their fingertips to make the burden or the adoption of it just supernatural. And then wonderful companies that are incumbents in the space, like Epic, right? They've opened the doors as well to allow for third-party integration, so that there isn't this, you know, wall that you hit. I might have a great technology, but I can't actually get it to, you know, interface with the systems that are the systems of record. That is the operating system of the hospital, right? And so, you know, that's a really important part, is we have to recognize where these operating systems exist and make sure that, you know, we're creating the conditions where a whole ecosystem can thrive, because that has been also some of the challenges in the past, is the interoperability, to use that fancy word the healthcare industry loves, of all of these different systems. So that's how I think about it.
Yeah, I mean that's literally like that's the trend like that we're seeing, right? It's the health literacy, it's the ease of implementation, partially because of interop, but partially because these systems are so right. I mean, they're accelerating the developers, and then again, platforms, a lot of open source, right? I think you know a lot of folks are converging there and allowing. And then finally, I think the last two pieces to me are, to your point, expectations on behalf of the patient because they're using the tools, they have access like they've never had before. And then the final piece, I think there's a the generate. You know, I talked to you know health systems, and they're stunned at how many of their workforce are you know interested or using the tools today. But then also in the education side, the youngest doctors, the newest generation, they're using it all the time too, and it's actually making them better at you know. Learning the concepts, potentially even patient interactions, having difficult conversations, which is something we brought up before. And this is probably the last chart we'll bring up. This is from a paper that just looked at medical students using the model, using an AI model that was meant to simulate a patient encounter, and then how they ultimately did on their clinical tests, like their evaluation. Are they ready to, you know, have conversations with patients, et cetera? This is like one of those rites of passage in your medical school training. And at the bottom, you can see that the group that used AI outperformed those that did not at all or used the traditional, you know, sort of curriculum. But the other cool thing about this paper, which again, I think, Kim, it speaks to your idea of like, this is democratizing. This is, you know, everyone has access to these. The students, actually, 70%+ of them weren't sure if they were working with an AI or an instructor in some cases with these chat interactions, which is like literally the Turing test in medicine. But I think to the point of like, there's this familiarity, there's these increasing competencies. But as a learning tool, and Justin knows this is one of my soapboxes, I don't think we're thinking about this as often as we probably should, at the ability to upskill folks in a variety of areas, leveraging these models. It's not a question answering machine, but as a tutor. I'm guilty of this too. I've struggled to do better at that. And I think there's a lot more to come here in terms of medical education getting transformed. And then I think we've got a complete cycle where things will continue to accelerate in the way that that you've outlined, and I'm here for it.
It's awesome. And I think the upskilling we have, again, here we have tremendous opportunity. I myself, as a consumer, right, I was talking about how you can just talk to your phone. I mean, my whole way to work, I want to learn about navigation systems for surgery, right? And I'm thinking about the technology behind it and what, and I just had a chat with Gemini all the way to work. And I'm getting smarter on my way to work while I'm driving, and I don't have to put myself in danger reading anything. And it isn't a, you know, a pre-recorded podcast that could be 2 years old. It's the here and now. It's reading all the papers that recently came out. It's giving me market intelligence. It's who the company's working in this space. And so, you can upskill on complicated areas like navigation systems and surgery in a 20-minute ride to work. And it put me on a whole other learning path as I did that. So, and it's just such a, it's to me, it's a joyous experience because you're not afraid to ask stupid questions. It's totally okay. And then you just keep getting better and better. So I think you're right. I mean, this generation is going to be Gen AI native, not just AI native. It's like generative AI native, where they can watch the chain of thought. Even watching the chain of thought is stunning, right? We have vision language models that are doing chain of thought for a radiologist. This is how radiologists are trained to think through, when they're doing their study. And it's really interesting to watch that. Or you're like you say, a veteran in the field, you can actually embody your train of thought into your own reasoning model. So it can work just like that for you. It's gonna be a tremendous time. And some people ask me like, well, what does success look like for you? And I'm like, for me or for NVIDIA? I'm like, if it's for me, it's when I, as a patient, feel every day that the health system has changed for me, right? And the fact that, I could go see a doctor and they are using a bridge, it's changing, and it's changing fast. Or if I can go, find that colonoscopy center that has Medtronic's GI Genius platform, this is good. But hopefully you're not going to have to seek it out. I think you guys were talking about like AGI and medicine a couple episodes ago, and it's like, hopefully actually as a patient, your level of care and your ability to be a good patient is just going through the roof like we've never seen before. So that's what success will look like for me.
No, that's amazing. And I think what's scary but exciting as well is while these changes are happening so fast, we do have an opportunity to use literally some of the same tools to re-educate both our patients and clinicians for kind of keeping up with it and where it's going. I guess like you said, talking with a model instead of listening to a podcast will make Matt and I out of a job here. On what we're doing.
Love
But that's okay.
that. I love them. And I, but it's very, it's very interactive. As I said, it's hard to interrupt a podcast with a silly question, but that's what you do in a learning environment. You might raise your hand and ask the professor something that you needed clarity on, right? And so I'm oftentimes pausing a podcast because I heard something I didn't understand, hitting up Perplexity and then coming back in, so it's we need all of it, but the ability to consume it is what I think is going to change the upskilling factor, because you can consume so much more complex information at such a rapid pace. So upskilling is going to take massive effect into all of this.
Well, I mean, one of the reasons we did this podcast, Kim, is so we could ask dumb questions of very smart people like you. And so we really appreciate you coming on and sharing everything that's going on with NVIDIA. We're just thrilled. Again, I think we see a similar future, and we'll be keeping very close tabs on the work that you all are doing, particularly as we start to move into this robotic space, which I'm personally fascinated about. Again, Justin and I don't get a lot of opportunities to talk about it. And I've learned something just talking to you today about that. So I'm gonna go read more. Maybe I'll talk with the model about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, robotics is to me the next frontier, and I'm here for it.
Yeah, Matt, Justin, thank you so much. I love when you say ask stupid questions. You guys know this space incredibly well. I'm just a student of the space, constantly hoping that we can take some of the most advanced, technologies and bring them into this domain where I believe it's going to have, the most profound impact. So I'm excited about that. And I would love for you guys to talk about another frontier, as you were saying, Matt, which is AI for science, AI for biological science, AI for the physical sciences, and actually how just AI is going to transform science. And a lot of the deep, personalized medicine space, it's very much science, right? Oncology and science are deeply similar in the way that they work. So it will be a really neat, autonomous labs with super intelligent agents is a tremendous future that I'm also super excited about.
Amazing. Well, we'll have to have you back to go deeper. Kim, thank you so much.
Thank you guys so much. Appreciate the opportunity. It was a pleasure.